B-Pod Studios.
Road trip.
Well, it's like I said, there's nothing pretty, you know. It's, at least I don't think. Maybe it was pretty from the top, but I mean, it's just nothing too flashy. It's, you know, just up a shot, retrieving pucks, winning battles, and Smitty coming off the wall with it and making a good play and finds the open man, and Grizz finishes it.
Leon Draisaitl scored both goals for the home team, and the Bruins road trip ends tomorrow night in Calgary. Forbes magazine announced yesterday the New York Rangers are the most valuable NHL franchise at $2 billion. The Bruins are ranked fifth at $1.3 billion. The NHL announced yesterday the sale of Pittsburgh Penguins to the Fenway Sports Group has been officially approved. Celtics will be in Phoenix tonight. Jaylen Brown out again. Brandy and Max have the pregame at 9:30 and the tip-off at 10 here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And former Denver Broncos wideout Demaryius Thomas found dead in his home last night at the age of 33. According to an Associated Press report, the family believes that Thomas died of a seizure. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by Elements Massage. Right now, buy one gift card and get another for 50% off. Visit ElementsMassage.com for a studio near you. I'm John Wallach of Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 8:30.
Tatum, to his left. Bogdanovich on him. Tatum steps to the left. Three in the air.
Got it. Ooh, good night, everybody. Drive safely.
This is Jason Tatum. You're listening to 98.5 The Sports Hub. The Celtics play here.
To make a great sports talk radio show work, you got to know when to talk.
Did you take anything specifically away from that game?
And when to listen.
What did we really learn about this team yesterday?
John, that is the exact question Rich just asked.
Thanks.
Is that right?
For listening.
How did I miss that?
To Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We are the Toucher and Rich radio program, and we have a big tour bus in the parking lot because Steve-O is in studio, and during his appearance here, you're going to get a pair of tickets to see him. Someone will, not all of you, to see him at the Chevalier Theater, and that is coming up on December 12th, Sunday, and a signed skateboard deck from him in Knoxville. Tickets are available at the ChevalierTheater.com. I will spell it ChevalierTheater.com. Rich, a place where I killed.
You did. You were there with Jim Norton.
And I destroyed.
You destroyed
the
place.
It was just, I mean, it was like guffawing after guffawing. Really, it was too much.
Steve-O, not the only one in studio, though. Who's this guy you got with you?
This is Wendy from Peru. This is the dog I found in the streets of Peru.
And he goes everywhere with you.
She does, yeah. Uh-huh.
Because on plane, I've seen you on planes.
Yep.
With her, because I see the podcast that you have.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen this dog many, many places.
Yeah, she's epic, man. You know, the video I made of finding her in the streets of Peru and then bringing her home to America got more views than any video I've ever put on the internet.
Now, I know you have a girlfriend.
Can you imagine how that made me feel?
I know. It's like you've been setting your, like, you know, nards on fire, and all you have to do is adopt a dog, and
right.
You end up getting the, you know, more
it's
hits.
Insane.
But I know you have a girlfriend. You still are
fiancé, yeah.
Right.
She's on the bus.
Okay, and so I have to imagine a video of you taking a stray dog from Peru and adopting it on, it was like a Spanish fly of some sort, that women were just like overjoyed with what you were doing.
I was already with my girl, and it was interesting when I found this dog. It had never been bathed, evidently.
Right.
Ever. She was filthy. And I tried to smuggle the dog into the hotel, but they caught me in the act, and they said, oh, no, you can't do it. So they pitched a tent for me, and I slept with the dog outside of the hotel. And I credit my girl for being a fan of that move. Like, flea-ridden street dogs, snuggling with them in tents outside the hotel is right up my girl's alley.
Yeah, well, it's up every female's alley. I mean, like, my cat died. I put my cat down. It was 21 years old, and I was getting messages from, like, internet, like, Instagram models. Like, I'm so sorry for you. And I'm like, well, The cat should, every cat, I guess this is what should be happening. But thank you so much for coming in. One thing about you is that your life has been so documented. I mean,
it has.
It's funny because people, like after the show yesterday, one of the people on the show was like, oh, did you know Steve O in college, like, jumped off like the dorm, his dorm room, and like broke a bunch of stuff? And I'm like, yeah, he filmed it. Like, he's been filming this. Like, he's been, if you go, if you do a deep enough dive on Steve-O, on you, like, you've been filming everything. Like, you met Motley Crue as a kid. That's on, you have evidence,
yeah,
you have
still photographic of that.
You have photographic evidence of that.
No, it was just like a meet and greet.
No, this,
that.
No. This was 1987. I was living in Toronto, and I was just a diehard Motley Crue fan. And the day before their concert on Girls, Girls, Girls tour in Toronto, I saw on the news that they had gotten in some kind of trouble. I think maybe lit a hotel room on fire or something or other. But the news was complaining about them being in town. And I was like, wow, the concert's tomorrow and they're here now. So, I figured that meant that they were staying in a hotel. And so I went about calling every single hotel in the Yellow Pages, asking for a room by the name of their manager. And about 3 hours into it, I was patched through. And a guy picked up the phone in the hotel room. It was the brother of their manager. And when he learned that I had called every hotel in the Yellow Pages, he was sufficiently impressed that he offered to give me backstage passes and tickets in the fifth row.
So, oh, that's awesome.
Was this a Doc McGee situation?
It was Doc McGee.
Wow, okay.
That's exactly who it was, and his brother was Scott McGee.
Okay.
And so I got two backstage passes, two tickets in the fifth row, and my dad accompanied me and took photos with me with Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx. And this was on October 25th of 1987.
What is backstage during the Girls, Girls, Girls Motley Crue tour like? Like, there's not many tours where I could go, what would be the most debaucherous? Like, maybe some of, like 1984 Van Halen.
Yeah.
This might be the other one.
I think they got Van Halen beat.
Oh, really?
What did you see? Like, and how old were you at this?
I was 13.
Oh, my God. Okay, what did you see as a 13-year-old backstage at Motley Crue?
I don't know that I saw anything particularly shocking. It was very crowded, that's for sure. In the photo of me and Nikki Sixx, you can imagine that there's a lot of heroin going on. Like, his eyes are very glazed over.
Yeah, well, that's hard to imagine. The Girls, Girls, right. Girls tour, heroin being involved?
Right. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it wasn't necessarily that I had anything, you know, of importance to say to these guys. It wasn't,
sure.
You know, that, like, it was just the fact that I was standing next to them. And because I made that happen out of just sheer determination, mm-hmm. that I really credit that experience for making me into a monster. Oh, you know, geez. I just developed a belief that I could accomplish a lot of things.
Okay, because I'm not, you know, your story of you know, how you've kicked drugs and everything, and in how positive it's been is really inspiring to a ton of people. And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, go crazy on you with these things. But one thing I saw on Instagram, not looking for it, it's just I follow someone from Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And they randomly, like last year.
Right.
Can you tell kind of
sure.
the story about what, because they did not take that well.
They did not. They absolutely did not. This happened in 2006. I had been sort of buddies with Method Man.
Okay.
Of Wu-Tang. And, he had been on our show, Wild Boys. I linked up with him in a couple other situations. So it's kind of considered Method Man a buddy. And in 2006, there was it was called Rock the Bells. This was a big sort of hip-hop festival headlined by Wu-Tang. And I showed up fairly early in the day, just drinking. I was polluted. And I came up with the idea that during the Wu-Tang performance, specifically when they stopped to pay tribute to Old Dirty Bastard, that as a tribute to Old Dirty Bastard, that I might perform a trick which I called the double back flip, in which I strip completely naked and then flip my junk back and forth and jump up in the air and catch it in what's called a mangina.
Yes.
Without touching anything. It's a pretty impressive move. You
okay,
know?
Yes, absolutely.
The hands-free tuck.
Yes.
And then once tucked in the mangina position, then I would perform a standing back flip.
Yes.
Which is a scary move. I mean, the first time I ever did a double back flip, I thought I was gonna rip it off.
Right.
And I got away with it. But I proposed to Method Man that I'm gonna do this. He just kind of laughed at first, and I'm like, oh yeah. And then remember later, he says, dude, they're gonna beat you up, dude. You can't do that. And I was like, oh man. ODB would love that, you know. Great.
Right? Yeah.
I'm just out of my mind, wasted. And then, sure enough, during the performance, and ODB's mom was on stage, and it was all this whole thing, and Method Man just handed me the mic,
and
I explained to the crowd how I had been locked up in LA County Jail in protective custody on what's referred to as Robert Downey Jr. block, that the correctional officers explained to me that I was, that ODB was in there so frequently that I was actually in ODB's cell, and I felt this special kinship with them, and I proceeded to get butt naked and flip my junk back and forth and do a backflip, and everybody kind of was in pretty good spirits, and then you know, after my stunt, then they played Shimmy Ya and Brooklyn Zoo, and I think after like the halfway through the second song after my stunt, Raekwon, the member of Wu-Tang, he'd finally had enough, and he ordered that all the music stop. He grabbed me by the neck. He said, I didn't appreciate that. And he said that he explained to thousands of people in the audience that he was about to hospitalize me with a vicious assault, and unless I were to apologize to the crowd. And man, I've never apologized more profusely, more quickly. I'm sorry.
Because I thought it was kind of unfair. Like in defense to you. Like, they hand you a mic, you're Steve-O,
you told him
this,
what you were going to do.
Yeah, you told him what you're going to do, and then all of a sudden, like, yeah, it's because in Raekwon, it occurs to him, like, oh, I don't like this, I'm going to kick the... And they put you in that position. It's kind of unfair.
I mean, you know what? It was highly entertaining for the audience. I certainly don't have any hard feelings about it. And I think that what made that appear on, where was it?
It was like on Instagram. Yeah, it was maybe Jizza or RZA.
It was Jizza. And I think it was because I'd had Method Man on my podcast and sort of brought up the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what kind of put it back on the radar a little bit. I don't have any hard feelings about it. I thought it was just fine.
Well, these stories, you know, like this, that, you know, come out like years later and they remind you of that, you know, you've been very open about, you know, some of the stuff that you did.
Sure.
Before, as a matter of fact, you had a podcast special called Celebrities I Did Cocaine With.
Right.
And
well, that's been part of your stand-up act.
Yeah, it wasn't a podcast special. It was just sort of a random YouTube video.
Yeah.
And when it came time for me to tape my second comedy special, which you know, it's been a couple years now, that was a bit in the show. It was you know, my celebrity cocaine stories, and you know, sort of at the last minute, my agent suggested that wasn't a good idea to include in the special, and I ended up leaving it out. But I thought, you know.
But the celebrities you named are ones that aren't of quite the best reputation
like
anyway.
Lindsay Lohan stealing your coke, is it like a big surprise?
Yeah, so the ones that I saw, Lindsay Lohan, there was a Paris Hilton one, and I think Kid Rock.
Kid Rock, uh-huh. I called her Lindsay Blowhan. the Paris Hilton one... If I remember correctly, because I didn't really incriminate Paris quite so much. What it was I said that she had, you know, fairly regularly back in the day, she would invite me to her parties because, you know, I, without fail, I would just do some ridiculously dumb things, you know, like whatever it was. And she just always got a kick out of my, you know, my party tricks, my dumb stunts. It was just always something with me, and she would be entertained by it. And there was one point where I pulled out my laptop computer and I was like, hey, check it out. Because I had been in the habit of recording, even surreptitiously, which was pretty crazy. But way back then, my first digital camera, like I would make these sort of homemade, like self-filmed clips of me in the act, you know?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Okay. All right. Yeah.
With various ladies. And I just kind of like just randomly with it, and it was Paris Hilton and her sister Nikki Hilton, and I was like, oh, check it out. And I just sat down and screened for both of them all of these you know, highly explicit you know, pornographic videos that I had recorded, and the joke was that I felt like I was showing my skateboard videos to Tony Hawk.
Yeah, this is conquered ground. Yeah. You've got the big one. But that was back in the day where, like, Paris Hilton was, like, banging skaters and stuff. That was, like, back in the day, like, where...
Yeah, like,
I
mean,
Moose Guns.
I don't know how many skaters, but I think that I don't doubt that there's veracity to that claim.
Yes,
and Kim Kardashian was in that circle as well. Do you remember? I mean, was she part of that crew?
She, I had different encounters with Kim Kardashian. It was, what brought us all kind of in the same orbit was the same production company which made The Simple Life with Paris Hilton also started the Kim Kardashian, the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and did a show with me called Dr. Steve-O. So it was this the producers from this production company that brought us all together.
Okay. Now, what is doing... For some reason, I want to know what it's like doing cocaine with Kid Rock, because he seems like somebody that's already at a different level.
I mean, dude, it was insane, man. It was absolutely insane. This was it was when 2004 gave way to 2005, and yeah, it was in 2000. It was New Year's Eve, and it was actually a Paris Hilton New Year's Eve party at a huge hotel in Miami. And, you know, I was hanging out with Kid Rock at this party. I think it was the first time I ever met him. And he says, you know, do you want to do some blow? I'm like, sure. And we went into some, you know, other room that was bona fide empty. And it was a big room, and it had a huge piano in it. And Kid Rock pulls out this bag that, like, I mean, like... There was nothing that screamed personal use about the size of this
bag. It was the Scarface situation.
It was the bag in Indiana Jones when he was taking the idol.
Yeah. I mean, it was utterly insane.
Yeah, this is trafficking charges. Yeah. This whole thing, yes.
Oh, dude. I mean, big time, dude. Like right off an airplane. And so he dumps onto the piano... like this mountain of cocaine, like, and it was like with his arm, you know, not like you'd think, like normally somebody will like, you know, they'll chop up a line, they'll you know, with like a razor blade.
Yeah, so the credit card.
His whole forearm. And he ran this mountain of cocaine like all the way along the whole piano with his arm, and I like jumped back, you know, just like. Like, I just said, what the hell is that?
Right.
You know, like, and he was just cool as a cucumber. He said, oh, man, it's cool. We'll just chip away at it. we'll just, we'll we'll just chip away at it. And sure enough, we did. And
it's like you ordered the big sundae at the ice cream restaurant.
It's Vans versus food.
Yeah, two spoons.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I got along with Kid Rock great. I remember we were still chipping away at it at 2 p.m. the next day.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we had changed locations by that point, but yeah.
You probably found out a lot about the guy. I mean, I would imagine there's quite a bit of conversation going on at that point.
Yeah, at the time, George W. Bush was the president, and Kid Rock was a big fan.
No!
That was one thing that became very clear.
All right. We have to break. We will eventually be giving away the skate deck. Steve O's playing the Chevalier on Sunday. We'll have tickets for that. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Every day.
He looks worse than me. Way worse than me.
Toucher and Rich.
And I don't look good.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
With Toucher and Rich, Steve O is going to be at the Chevalier Theater on Sunday. Tickets are available at thechevaliertheater.com. Later, we're going to have a deck that's actually very cool that is signed by him in Knoxville to give away along with tickets to that show. For your edification, the response online has been very positive towards your appearance so far.
Right on, man.
So we do enjoy that.
I saw the trailer for the new Jackass movie. Now, with all of you guys have gone through and with all of the different injuries and everything that you guys have amassed, and now you add, you know, the years that, you know, we all are, was there part of you that was half excited and half, I don't know if I can do this?
For me, I had remained so active, you know, like since the last one. The last 10 years, I've just been messing myself up more than ever. So I felt like my crazy muscles were pretty strong.
Yeah.
I was shocked, though, that Knoxville came around.
Let's talk about Knoxville, because everything I read is that he's not athletically gifted, that he has a terrible balance, that because... You can skate. You obviously, everyone knows the Ringling Brothers stuff, that you were trained, which is not easy. You're a trained clown, right, yeah, who can do all those stunts.
Knoxville, like most of the Jackass guys, like grew up falling off of skateboards, having developed a real sort of sense for where they are in the air.
Yes,
you know, like a knack for falling down, and Knoxville never had that. So, whenever Knoxville, you know, steps on a skateboard, you know, when he does some kind of a stunt, like it's devastating.
Yeah,
you know, because he has absolutely no coordination. He's got no you know, sense for falling down, and it's catastrophic when Knoxville falls down because he doesn't know how to do it.
Right.
And you know, there was, you know, in the Big Brother days, there was he set about dropping in on a half pipe.
I've seen
this.
It's
like a 12-foot vert ramp. Yeah. And he just falls like 12 feet to the middle of the ramp on the flat bottom.
Oh. Is that one of the more difficult ones for you to watch? Because for me, it is.
It's absolutely difficult. And what's worse is that I understood that in years and maybe to this day, for all I know, that like actually making like left hand turns in his car was like painful because he had such lasting damage from just that one fall.
Yeah.
You know, like I think Knoxville, and he's a very private person. It's like I wouldn't even know, you know?
Right.
I wouldn't even know, but he wouldn't. I know that he had like some herniated discs, some problems with his discs in his back from these catastrophic slams.
Well, he said in Vanity Fair, like, the scariest thing was he had this, like, equilibrium problem, like vertigo problem that it made it, like, really hard, like you said, to drive even, but, like, to, like...
Just keep balanced.
To keep balanced. The head injury stuff was, like, no joke.
Right, for sure. And you know, I just did, this is so funny, I just had a writer from Men's Health follow me around for a whole day.
Cool magazine.
And I'm going to have a feature article in Men's Health. Is that so funny?
Dude, let's see the abs. What's the workout, bro?
Dude, I went crazy trying to not eat and do push-ups and stuff. I've since done my photo shoot. So yesterday I ate, like, you know, a box of like 8-inch diameter cookies.
Are you getting rid of tattoos? Tattoos?
I got rid of the profanity on my knuckles.
Okay.
And you know, I had the S word and the F word tattooed on my knuckles for well over a decade, and I was super proud of it. I loved it. I'm forever proud that. That I was able to skate through life with
oh, absolutely.
Oh, sure.
You know, for anybody else, that would have been a real
job killer. Yeah. You're not going into the, you know, like, can I be a junior executive? Right. Oh, never mind why I signed the contract.
Right. But at a certain point, I felt that it just kind of outlived its usefulness, that it was a little bit more aggressive than I choose to be in my daily life.
So that means that some of your tattoos are coming off due to fire or injury or something?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I saw your arms and I'm like, I wonder if he's getting things removed. But no, this is just from...
I lost some ink to a stunt where I laid down in rocket engine fuel.
I watched that last night. Yeah.
And I had third-degree burns requiring skin graft surgery on 15% of my body. And this was the closer for my last comedy special.
Oh, my God.
Now,
my stand-up has become multimedia in nature.
Well, you're following in the footsteps of George Carlin. I mean, he was notorious for letting himself on fire. So with the skin grafts, how long a process is that for you? Because seem to heal well.
Yeah, I'm like Wolverine. The skin graft is a fairly quick situation. I mean, burns, like, it was the most excruciating pain I've ever.
Yeah.
You know, burns are the worst. And I heard that on my little burn unit tour that anybody who's been both stabbed and shot will tell you that burns are the worst.
That's quite a life if you've had all three.
Well, yeah.
Is that rarefied air, or am I just hanging out with the wrong
people? Dr. Walsh will come in. Yes, well, the gunshot to my abdomen was painful. But when I burned, when the crack pipe exploded,
it was pretty strange life choices.
The blessing of it was that it was always very frustrating when people would ask me what stunt hurt the most.
Yeah,
because I would always think, oh man, it's apples and oranges. You know, you've got different criteria for pain.
Yeah,
if you get electrocuted with a stun gun or a cattle prod or a taser. That's going to be really acute pain, but it's going to be short-lived.
Sure.
Whereas if heaven forbid, you scrape all the skin off your butt cheek and then you got to peel your underwear off your butt cheek every time you stand up for the next 2 weeks, just the duration of that is more nightmarish.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was acute-ass pain for weeks.
Yeah.
So I had an answer. The skin grafts...
Can you take, like, painkillers now?
No.
Oh, no, Jesus,
I've never even
Steve.
Filled out a prescription for painkillers
since
I got sober.
All right, so, yeah, because you're going through all this without any kind
of
medicinal help.
I'll take it when I'm in the hospital, whatever comes through
sure,
the IV.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know, that's a doctor giving it to me through an IV. That's fine.
Right.
But, and you can't have surgery without
of course,
anesthesia.
Of course.
So, But once I leave the hospital, I've never even filled out a prescription. It's been all Tylenol, Advil, and in the most horrifying cases, Tylenol and Advil.
Is there
that's a big mixture there, Steve.
Yeah, you're asking for it. It's unbelievably effective, man. When I
really?
had uh, I had a plate and 11 screws in my ankle, mm-hmm. and Tylenol plus Advil.
That did it.
I mean, it got
that's
me
how clean your body is now.
Yeah,
no joke.
So.
That's like your body is processing that stuff.
It's got to also be like some like mind games that you have to teach yourself. Like,
you gotta be in the mantra is it's a good thing I'm so gnarly.
So did you now the new movie when it's coming out? When is it coming out? By the way, keep
moving. Fingers crossed that it doesn't get like what a seventh release date.
Yeah, I know.
But we're scheduled for February 4th.
All right, how's everything going with Bam?
Well, because I'll tell you this because I saw Steve-O, there's a video out there, and it's when you were like just taking nitrous like constantly,
right?
Like, you were just doing nitrous. And good for you, man, to release that because it's scary. What I will say about this, and I know about addiction, is that Majera did an interview with a Brazilian like thing, a Brazilian company, and he, it's not like cute, it's like bad.
Yeah.
Like.
When was this?
Not too long ago, he sits down with like and he's like telling the guy to drink his drink, and he's threatening Tremaine, and he's like,
right. And was this the one that was like some sort of like it was supposed to be like a recovery oriented podcast called Knocking Down Doors or something?
He's outside on a patio.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Well, it doesn't come off like that. I mean,
it was really upsetting.
Yeah.
What was worse was that particular interview had been recorded like months before it was actually published, which really created the impression that Bam was in a much worse place than he was at the time
when
it came out. Now, when you ask how's Bam doing, I don't even know. Like, I'm not like a particularly filtered guy, but I know that when the courts become involved with like guardianship stuff, which is the kind of the situation that.
Yeah.
That you're not supposed to really say a whole lot.
Sure.
No, I totally understand.
I'm instructed to not say a whole lot, but to keep it sort of somewhat brief, like he's been in a rehab situation, and that has not been his choice.
Okay. Is he still as angry with you guys as he was before?
He was never angry with me.
No, I know he wasn't.
You know, and that's because I'm below the line. I'm not I'm not a shot caller in the Jackass world.
Are you a producer?
I got a producer credit on the new movie.
Okay.
Along with Chris Pontius. But that really didn't mean a whole lot of anything.
Right.
I'm still, I don't make decisions.
So, because he was mad at Tremaine and Knoxville.
And Spike. Yeah, oh, yeah. Spike Jonze.
Right.
And hey, man, I feel so conflicted about the whole thing.
Why didn't they let him in? Like why did that start?
It was as simple as he's never ever had any kind of consequences, you know. And there's just been so much enabling, you know, around. Like at every step, I kind of feel like that's how things got so bad, is because he's just been surrounded by enablers that just have catered to his addiction. And, you know, in this, like, and it got really gnarly. I mean, I don't have to, there's no revelation here, man. If you have seen any of his exploits over the last however many years, it's been really upsetting.
Yeah.
And I found myself seeing, like, you know, him on TMZ or with some of the crazy stuff he was posting on his Instagram. And I found myself thinking, yes, you know, he's finally where I was at, you know, now, like when you get that bad, then you get better.
Right.
And he just managed to not, have any sense of accountability. Like it's always everybody else. Mm-hmm. And there's just, It's really scary, man. So I think that the philosophy of structuring his deal such that, hey, look, man, like what's been going on with you is not okay. We want you back, and you know, It's like every episode of Intervention on A&E. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that we won't do to help you, but there's nothing we will do to help you stay sick.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like, yeah. And it just goes to show what a gnarly disease addiction is, that, you know, with the promise of millions of dollars and everything to gain, it's just not enough to stay sober.
And enough. Also that Knoxville, if I'm not mistaken, orchestrated your intervention.
Correct.
And so you got nothing but respect for that.
And it's the same dynamic.
And it's the same dynamic.
Same exact dynamic.
So you have this experience of like, dude, this is where my life is now. It worked for me.
Right.
Like
100%. And when Bam was you know, attacking these guys, Knoxville and Tremaine and Spike and you know, him attacking them, I had to speak up and say, hey, man, like, you're like attacking these guys for doing the same thing mm-hmm. for you, which saved my life. And it's
obviously not a selfish act. You know, it's like not like, oh, we want your money. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Those guys do love money.
Well, but, so does everyone.
Right. But that money was not a motivation at all.
Right, sure.
You know, money was not even remotely, you know, if anything, they would have way preferred to have Bam in the movie. You know, like, presumably the movie would have been more successful with Bam in it. You know, it would, like, nobody wanted the movie to have this...
like cloud,
this cloud, this whatever, it's tarnished in some kind of way.
But it's like at the point where you've done the best that you can do. Like, everyone seems to have exhausted all of their goodwill.
Absolutely.
And at some point you just got to go, you made the decision for us.
They're 100%.
When you start threatening a guy's family.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
That's pretty much.
Right.
All right, dude. Well, now I have to get the courts involved. All right. Well, it will be a lighter note. We will break. We have a contest for the listeners, a very brief contest. Rich has something for Steve-O, and we'll finish things up with Steve-O coming up in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And that's got to be a soul-killing exercise.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Dutcher and Rich. Steve-O, cool enough to join us for this hour. If you're going to a show at the Chevalier Theater, know that there is... people pass out at these shows, I found out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, dude, big time. in more cities than not, we have full-grown men... absolutely pass out cold in the audience.
And I will say that's a pussy move. If watching you do something on stage is making someone pass out.
It's alarming, even though for the most part I understand everybody just wakes up, they're perfectly fine. The problem is when they get up and go to the bathroom because they don't feel right, and then they pass out in the bathroom
God.
Hit their head. But, I imagine people are wondering, like, oh, why would people pass out? It's because it's a multimedia show. It's called The Bucket List. And The Bucket List is, it's stunts that were never supposed to happen because they're so messed up. You know,
like, okay.
And they're flagrantly illegal in many cases. They're literally X-rated as well. And, you know, as an example, the first thing that made people pass out is called the Vasectomy Olympics.
Okay, goodness.
Yeah, and I thought that the vasectomy procedure was pretty underwhelming, you know? Like, I didn't think it was very, very shocking, but lo and behold, some people see a vasectomy. And
so you're saying there will be no Steve-O, Steve-O Jr.?
And it's, it's, I have no interest in that, so we made that official. Then there's some other medical stunts like one where a medical professional in disguise puts an IV in my arm, administers general anesthesia drugs while I'm riding a bicycle.
Oh, my God. Well, I just got to call. I got to colonoscopy. Yeah. So if they give you that propofol, you get a nice. That's going to knock you out right on there.
Right, and then there's another one where a medical, and this one makes people pass out as well. The 4-inch needle going into my spine.
Oh, man.
They inject a drug into my, and again, in a field.
Sure.
Medical professional in disguise, recklessly endangering everything they've worked for in their life. To inject a drug into my spinal cavity to render me paralyzed while I'm in a full sprint.
Oh, my God.
Which I'm.
How'd you think of that?
It all started when I was trying to take on trophy hunting by, and encouraging trophy hunters to use tranquilizer darts instead of slaughtering these beautiful animals to get a douchebag photo. since the pandemic, I've added more to the bucket list. So now we've got more for people to pass out to.
Oh, my God.
John Jones, the greatest MMA fighter of all time.
Yeah.
Trying to give me a cauliflower ear with a hammer. And he went a little overboard.
Hang on. Try to, like, hit you with a hammer?
Oh, yeah.
What ear?
And my ear gets blasted open with a hammer by John Jones.
What?
And that makes people pass out.
What does he have to sign? In order for, because he could kill you. Oh no, your ear's on a table.
Ear's
on a table.
Right, my ear's on a workout machine. With
okay.
His current light heavyweight championship belt resting on top of it, and he's hitting the. He's hitting the belt. But yeah, no, you just signed a regular release form.
Oh my God.
Okay. Ronda Rousey, Jorge Masvidal, Chuck Liddell. I had a real Hall of Fame who's who list of ultimate fighters.
Well, I think the Butterbean thing is the worst Knoxville has ever gotten hurt. He says, but
yeah,
I don't know.
In Jackass Forever, he blows that away.
Yeah. Okay, I've heard about that.
Well,
yeah.
I want to. Speaking of Jackass, there's only one thing I want to do here because we don't have a ton of time. But almost kind of like a behind the stunt. I want to see if you can identify the stunt by the sound effect that you made while making the stunt. Okay, and then I want you to tell me a little bit about the imagining and how this all went down. Take a listen.
Supreme.
That is the Poo Cocktail Supreme.
I actually knew that.
All right. Now, for people who may have not seen that, what exactly happened in that stunt?
They did like 100-foot cranes and porta potty, which was attached to the top of the cranes by bungee cords, and it was pulled all the way down super tight. The porta potty was filled with dog poop because to fill it with human poop would have been an OSHA violation.
Oh, really?
and
where do you find that much dog poop?
Dude, there. I don't know if the company still exists, but when we shot that movie in 2010, they found a company which will sell you as much dog poop as you want, and the name of the company was We Do.
I have a new favorite company.
Yes. So it's loaded with all the dog poop.
Yeah, it's loaded with dog poop, and I think they mixed it with water and stuff, so it'd be perfectly gross. And I'm inside the porta potty with goggles on, nose plug, ear plugs, and they release it, so it's catapulted up into the sky, and about 100 feet in the air, it reaches its pinnacle, and then upon descent, all of the poo comes out. So it's pretty fantastic. But the question is, why did I have all that protective gear with the goggles and the nose plug? Considering that the whole time it was flying through the air, I was screaming my head off with my mouth wide open. I remember when we played back the GoPro footage from inside, and Noxo says, if your mouth wasn't so wide open, that poo might have hit you in the face.
All right. We don't have time for another one, but I'll tell you this, is that Steve-O, everyone's very excited. He'll be at the Chevalier Theater on Sunday night. You might pass out. It has happened on more than one occasion, and that was off the air conversation. That was true talk. And we really appreciate it, man.
It's an honor to be here. I've actually heard from friends I have in the area that you guys have been mentioning that I've got this show coming up and doing that like throughout the week. So thank you for that.
We're legit fans. I mean,
yeah.
I super appreciate it. I could not be more thrilled with this bucket list show. I've been doing the stand-up comedy circuit for 11 straight years, really developing the craft and now having all of my worlds converge into one. It's just straight explosive, and I'm so thrilled with it. And this show is gonna not just make people pass out; it's gonna blow them away too.
Awesome, Steve-O. See him at the Chevalier. All right, take a Nick. Caller number four. What's the number to the
contest line?
617-931-0985.
All right, to that number. It's been so long since we've given anything away.
Yep.
Of any importance. And then, so caller four, I will ask you the two questions, which you, if you get them both right, you will win the deck signed by Knoxville and Steve-O and tickets to the show. If not, caller five will get the prize. All right. That's how we'll do it. All right. We'll be right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.